Welcome to our latest show, where we're thrilled to have an exceptional guest, Dr. Dale Buchberger. With his unparalleled expertise, Dr. Buchberger brings a wealth of knowledge from his diverse educational background in chiropractic, physical therapy, and strength and conditioning. As a former associate professor at New York Chiropractic College and a former chiropractic consultant for the New York Jets, Dr. Buchberger has a track record of working with elite athletes and teams. From his time as strength and conditioning coordinator for the Auburn Stingray swim team to his tenure as a chiropractic consultant for the Syracuse University Athletic Department, Dr. Buchberger has always been at the forefront of sports medicine. He has lectured extensively across the United States, Canada, and Europe, and has published numerous articles in prestigious peer-reviewed journals. Currently serving as the team chiropractor for the Auburn Doubles Days baseball team and running his own practice, Active Physical Therapy Solutions, Dr. Buchberger continues to make waves in the field. As the 2009 Sports Chiropractor of the Year, he is the perfect expert to guide us through today's discussion on injury prevention and performance optimization in spring sports. Don't miss this opportunity to learn from the best. Tune in now.
All right, Dale, it's great to have you on the show, and we really appreciate your time. And despite the jersey you're wearing, we're going to talk like more baseball, softball, beach volleyball, swimming, because these are all spring sports, and that's what we're kind of entering in. We're leaving the winter behind, and we're entering the spring. And so with that comes shoulder and upper extremity issues, which is kind of why you're here, Mr. Upper Extremity Expert. So we'd like to kind of talk about all the quick fixes and the magic bullets that we all are out, that are out there, because we all know they're real, and they all know that I can wave this magic wand across my shoulder and it's miraculously fixed. And so why don't we just start with that? What's your favorite magic bullet and quick fix? Because I know you know that stuff, and I know
Well, like I've said before, I think the number one magic bullet out there is patience.
Ooh, good one.
And patience, not only on behalf of the athletes, but on behalf of the doctors, the coaches, the trainers, athletic trainers, specifically the strength and conditioning people. You know, in today's instant gratification age, everybody wants to be better yesterday, right? They come in, I'm sure, you know, they come into your offices and, you know, if they're not better in three visits, it's like, you know, throw up the flag, right? Some of that, I think, came from the third party payer industry, where they would say, well, you've got six visits to get, you know, a disc herniation with, you know, no reflex, sensory findings, and quad atrophy better. and you know, so right. Whether it's a shoulder or an elbow, and I have many examples that are current in the office right now and in high school, youth, high school, and college aged players that know the magic bullet's patience. And understanding time frames, whether you look at what's out there today, right? You know, laser's the hot thing again, extracorporeal shockwave, active release, instrument du jour, right? So whether it's a Graston instrument, whether it's a butter knife, cupping, right? Cupping got big with Michael Phelps and everybody running around with circles on their octopus circles on their shoulder and K-tape, right? So we've got all these things out there. The problem is that we can't speed healing time, right? I mean, we can improve it, but patience really is the magic thing. If you can be patient and lower the anxiety level and follow a course that is, I dare say, scientifically sound in our current age about the word science. We know tissues heal at a certain rate, and we can improve that. But the bottom line is time has to go by, And if we don't allow that time to go by, you're just setting them up for failure again as they return to their sport. They're going to be back in your arms. So why did I get hurt again? Well, because we never really fixed it the first time. Mm-hmm. That's probably the biggest issue. Moms and dads are the worst offenders.
Yeah.
And I got stories on that. And that's part of the problem is everybody wants to be better yesterday, and there is no yesterday. Yesterday passed. And we're on to today and tomorrow and the next day. That's so what I got for you, man. I'm sorry. Like, I hate to burst bubbles, but.
Oh, that's what I was looking for, actually.
No, patience.
That is a fact of life. And
it is.
And,
patience is.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Spencer. I'm sorry.
No. I was going to say, you know, patience is of the utmost importance. And then, you know, removing the environmental factors that people encumber, and I want to talk to you more about that later on, like, you know, the way they sleep or the way they insult the injury after you've already taken care of it and spent all this time, you know, but I actually want to talk about a area that people, especially some of the pro athletes now that are recognizing prevention and, you know, recovery concepts more now than ever before. It's nice to see, and, you know, everything, you know, with the idea of reduce the risk of injury. Can you break it down, like shoulder, elbow, wrist, and, you know, what do you see happen? You know, what mistakes are athletes making making these days that are the most to these joints?
So let's look at recovery, right? And you look at and let's use baseball. We'll just use baseball. We can interject swimming. We can interject softball. We could even interject volleyball from a repetition standpoint, right? So when we look at recovery, softball players get almost no recovery, right? Especially whether it's youth, high school. I got a girl in the office, young lady playing high school softball, very good team in this state, in this area. And because of weather, right? I'm in upstate New York. So we're still in like early spring here, which means it's winter. You know, we had our couple of 80 degree days and you know, tease us. And now we're back to 45 degrees raining and cloudy and blah, 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 and sleet and snow and hail. All right. We had hail 2 days ago. So you look at that and they played 5 games in a row. Right. And I know for the most part, the pitching staff's probably two girls, you know, two players, right? Mm-hmm. So they're getting used over and over again, right? But the position players had to play 5 days in a row too and top of practices. So they're not getting any recovery. You look at baseball and why are these guys come off the winter – they've all got trainers, right? They've all got personal trainers and strength and conditioning people and the nutritionist and the chiropractor and a PT and, you know, a voodoo magician. They've all had a sacrifice a chicken and they got Jobu in the locker, okay? So they've got it all, right? Because they got money and they got the ability to do that. How many injuries were in April? How many pitchers went down? How many position players went down, right? I mean, the Mets have, you know, they got their own version with Sterling Marte of Pedro Serrano. You know, he can't hit a curveball lately. So the Mets need to sacrifice a chicken. But he went down with either his back or his neck or something. And then look at Verlander, right? You know, he's like a day away from AARP, but he's still throwing 96 miles an hour, 97 miles an hour, 98 miles an hour, but he doesn't even get out of the gate.
Yeah.
They've been doing everything right all this time. And one of the things is accommodation. If they don't start, they need time to rest. They need time to recover after October. But then when's the magic time where you start throwing again to accommodate? Right. So in addition to patience, we have accommodation, and accommodation works in any sport. So if I take a player out for 3-4 months. They don't throw, which they need not to do. But now they have to accommodate. They just don't have to accommodate the osseous structures, right? The cortex of the bone has to reaccommodate to torsional motions. The tendons have to reaccommodate. The muscles have to reaccommodate. The nervous system has to reaccommodate. Their central nervous system has to reaccommodate to the act of throwing a 5-ounce spherical object. Right? Some people look at that. Some people don't. Right? Swimming is the same way. Okay, the nervous system, more so the nervous system in swimming, because they're anti-gravity, right? They're in a pool. So they don't have a lot of gravitational sensory stimulation on that, right? So that has to be introduced and trained outside of the pool or in different methods in the pool by using resistance or things like that. So we have a lot of different factors here in addition to patience and accommodation that play a role. And it connects to recovery, right? Now, you can get guys who are doing everything, right? They're doing the Lance Armstrong thing. They've got an earthing mat and you know, they got the vacuum boots on. And I think some of them need to put the vacuum boot on their head, you know, just from a mental standpoint, right? You get the hypochondriac where everything is a problem. Doesn't matter how little it is, everything's a problem. They all have – I used to tell the minor league guys, what's the difference between routine and superstition? Ooh. And I asked every minor league player that would come into sports medicine, come in to see a healthcare provider, what's the difference between superstition and routine? Do you guys know?
And baseball guys are – big on superstition.
Oh, baseball players, field goal kickers.
Yeah.
Right?
The answer to that question.
What is the answer to that question? I don't want to take up too much time waiting for Spencer to ponder that, but
yeah, go ahead. Yeah, we'll be here a while. So
the difference is that routine you don't change when you lose. Right? You do the same thing. If you eat a steak before every game, I had a player ate a steak before, you know, the night before every game, he ate a steak. Right? If he lost the next start, he still ate a steak the next game. That's routine.
That's routine.
Yeah. Right? Superstition, right. You change when you lose.
Yeah. Interesting.
Right? So if you wear the same socks.
I like that.
And you've been wearing the same socks for 40 games and you lose, you change your socks now. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Or, you know, you take Jobu out of the locker. Right? Or you don't sacrifice chicken and you don't get candlesticks. I mean,
right.
So it's that's the difference. And that's trying to get some of these players out of that superstition realm and into reality. And the other thing is sometimes we have these, I don't know what the word is. There's a word for it where, you know, how our body rhythms, right? I'm not a big eclectic voodoo person, but there are body rhythms, and I hate to say in the universe, let's say, right? But we know that it happened to me, right, with running when I was racing in college and high school, right? I'd have that day where, man, everything was in line, right? Nolan Ryan used to call it lining it up. Everything was lined up. I could do no wrong, right? And I could run out of my sneakers. So I felt like when the race was over, I could race another 5 miles and everything was just perfect. And then 4 or 5 days later, I've got another race and man, I can't get anything to work. And I'm carrying the proverbial piano on my back. Right? Well, pitching's like that. Sport, you know, other sports are like that. You have that outing, you know, the Tom Seaver outing where you strike out 19 and everything works and you paint the black and nobody can hit anything. And then the next game, you give up 8. 3 guys go yard on you. You can't find a strike. Okay. And that I think that's part of that, those rhythmic cycles, again, in the universe, let's say, right? But there has to be something to it.
Do you test
work all the time?
Would you test guys or athletes out? Would you test athletes out? Let's say they take their rest time, which rarely happens, but they're off season or what have you. Would you test them a certain way, muscle test, range of motion, as a preparation now in the absence of pain to see if they're weak in certain areas or ready? Would you
Terry, I may have put that in a text message I sent to you. I can't remember, but Spencer, you hit on a great point. And the issue is checking them periodically. So one of the things that we see in baseball, and specifically in baseball pitchers, is a thing called arm slot. So the only way we know that there's a problem with arm slot is you either test them on a periodic basis to see if they have the muscle strength, if something is deficient in, and they're not achieving their arm slot. You watch video, you match the exam to the video of their last outing, specifically in an outing where either their control and or their velocity were suspect. So we look at the saying goes, control goes first, velocity goes second, pain comes third.
Mm.
And that holds pretty clear. So we start to see control issues, right? They're walking more, they're throwing more balls, and then their velocity starts to drop a little bit, right? They're not consistently hitting, you know, if they average 97 miles an hour, now they're averaging 95 and a half, right? They might throw one pitch at 98, but then they're back to 95, right? So the average, their average starts to drop down. Especially with the control match, that's where the arm slot is fluctuating. Arm slot is what causes arm injuries.
What is arm slot? Like, what would we look for, those who don't play baseball?
Look at a healthy pitcher.
Uh-huh.
And you see when they're having a good outing, let's say. They're throwing lots of strikes. They have good control, good command of their three, four, five, six pitches, whatever it is their repertoire is. They're controlling all their pitches. They're putting them where they want to put them at the right spot. So the majority, you're going to be 90 to 95 degrees, regardless of body mechanics, is 90 to 95 degrees, right? That's the preferred arm slot, unless they're a submariner or a knuckleballer or somebody you're not really worried about getting hurt all that much. So you get your guy who's throwing gas, a Verlander. Scherzer, the kid from Washington, what was his name? Big tall kid, ended up with a UCL injury from the Nationals. I can't remember his name. Anyway, it'll come to me like 2 hours from now. You look at their arm slot. Now their arm slot might be dictated not by the arm, so you check that in your exam. It might be dictated by a problem with the legs. So they've got a hip weakness, typically front hip. So the front landing foot hits, they've got an instability. And when I say instability, I don't mean, you know, dislocating instability. They've got a weakness in their hip rotator cuff, right? I always say the body has three rotator cuffs. It's got, you know, one in each shoulder, it's got one in each hip, and it's got one in the spine, right? So all parts of our body are governed by some type of rotator mechanism. So the rotator cuff in the hip on the landing leg is weak. You get a wobble in the knee. The rest of the body accommodates for that. They change their arm slot to match that lead hip.
But what is arm slot? Can a tennis player have arm slot?
Yes.
What does it look like?
So it's the spot where they consistently bring their arm through that maximizes their performance or accuracy. Okay, so in baseball or softball, it's here.
Are you watching video to determine this?
In softball, it would be down here, but still there's an arm slot. Okay. In a tennis serve, you would have a consistent arm slot. In a volleyball serve, you would have a consistent arm slot. right? In swimming, you want
so it's the hands. Are you talking about the angle?
Yeah. So again, here, okay. Right? Okay. So does that elbow drop a little bit? Does the hand go out a little bit? Or are they consistently bringing the shoulder and elbow through in the same slot?
So the correct biomechanics is the slot you're referring to. And when they falter from that slot, then that's a problem.
And correct is individual, right? Correct.
Right.
That particular athlete that gives them the consistency and control and velocity.
So are you watching this under, like you could watch them in a game or watch video or not?
My eyes aren't that good. Okay. Yeah. I'm 60. My eyes are not that good. Okay. And I've had two eye surgeries. So yes, I watch video.
Yeah.
And that's one of the issues today. I was at the Major League Baseball Chiropractic Society. Is it society or association? Anyway, I spoke at one of their meetings, would have been pre-COVID, right? So maybe either 2018 or 2019. And one of the physical therapists or athletic trainers from the Diamondbacks was there. And I caught him on the side and I said, do you guys ever get in a room with the pitching coach and the player and watch video together? Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, no, that never happened. Even in today's day and age, getting a medical professional, sports medicine professional, the pitching coach, and the player in the same room to watch video of mechanics so that the sports medicine person picks up on the weakness, right? The physical, medical side of things. The pitching coach looks at the mechanics, and the player gets the benefit of that information. And now the three of us put a plan together and we fix that before the wheels fall off the bus, right? These guys they're Ferraris.
Yeah.
All you need is a little problem and you've got boom. Right. So that's the issue is little problems are big problems for these guys. Little problems in a 12-year-old, not so much. Bigger, stronger, faster. So bigger, stronger, faster equals bigger crash. Mm-hmm. Right? We know that in Pop Warner football, there is such a thing as a muscle strain. In high school, there's still such a thing as a muscle strain. When you get to Division I and professional football, there is no such thing as a muscle strain. So when ESPN says, oh, he has a strained hamstring equals tear, right? Because bigger, stronger, faster.
Yeah.
When you have that kind of power, right? We all know when, I don't know, who was it with, Purdy, Josh Purdy. As soon as his arm got hit, it's like, yeah, UCL tear. Mm. None of us sat there and said, he's got an elbow strain.
Strain. I see.
He didn't strain his tricep. No, every single one of us watched the game. Watched the impact and said UCL tear. And it took like a week, I think, or 5 days or something before they actually came out. Well, you know, he's going to go see this expert and he's going to go see that expert. And meanwhile, we're all like, yeah, it's UCL tear. When's he having surgery? And okay. Why? Bigger, stronger, faster.
So Dale, let me ask you though. I apologize for going back to arm slot, but I
know not at all.
The idea.
It's a big
now. How would you know though, if you don't have video of them, of the athlete, regardless of what sport it is, that is, you know, their throwing arm or their tennis, you know, or whatever it is, if they're showing aberrant motion from what their normal arm slot is, unless you have video of when they were healthy, what do you do?
On physical exam, you have to make an inference.
Okay.
So I make an inference. So I examine the supraspinatus. So I do a full can test. I do an empty can test and I compare them, right? So is there a difference? So the full can test, yeah, they check out strong. The empty can test, oops, not so strong. And maybe a little uncomfortable, right? Then I will check them at external rotation at 90 degrees. And then we find out, ooh, there's a little deficit. So when I test them up here, I push from the back, right? And they start to come down and then they stop. Now they get strong down here. So there, now I've got a 20, 30 degree area where there's a weakness, which means weakness equals potential for injury. So now I've got those two things. I've got an issue with the empty cannon. I got an issue with external rotation at 90 degrees, and I can make an inference that their arm slot is inconsistent because they have weaknesses in that area. Then I'm going to take it one step further and I'm going to check them for GERD, right? So I'm going to check them for glenohumeral internal rotation deficit at that point. So if I internally rotate at 90 degrees of abduction, and then I externally rotate at 90 degrees of abduction, that should be a minimum of 180 degrees when I add those up. If it's less than 180 degrees, we have a GERD problem and we have to fix that. Now, the GERD could be resulting in the weakness. It could be just inhibition, not true weakness, right? Or Ben Kibler used to call it relative weakness because there was a more proximal issue that was not allowing the muscle to function at its best. Mm-hmm. Right. So it wasn't anatomically weak. It was inhibited, or there was a more proximal instability that wouldn't allow it to hold securely and do its job. Okay. So those are the top three things that I would look for on exam that may infer we're having an arm slot issue or a potential arm slot issue. Right.
If you had your way, and you had a team that was, you know, a neighboring team. I don't want to always say baseball because there's sure. So many other sports there, but I know you get jazzed with baseball. But if you had your way with a set of athletes, and you know, prevention was key, what would you do with what would you do with them?
Specifically for shoulder, elbow?
Or, yeah, as a preventative measure from the start of the season, off season, what would be a approach to monitor the health monitor the health of their shoulder or elbow or wrist?
So the major issue there is athlete compliance.
Yeah.
Right. So
if you had your way,
patient compliance, right? We know that we can give them the benefit of the last 40 years of scientific information, but if they don't do it,
right,
we got nothing. Right. So let's look at that. We did this actually, right? So we did this with my son's swim team. And I went in and I have my CSCS certification in addition to my, you know, a DCPT diplomate in sports and CSCS, right? So I used my CSCS. I went in and I started a strength and conditioning program for the swimmers. And it was volunteer, right? They didn't have to do it. This was for kids who wanted to go to another level, right? Who didn't have access to a strength and conditioning program. And they would come in twice a week. And they would do the routine, and it consisted of rotator cuff exercises, exercise using an exercise ball, TRX, some band work, and some light dumbbell work, and some general plyo conditioning, right? Some of the students came in, knocked it out. Now, the problem with that was that, A, it was all volunteer, so I was being paid. I supplied all the equipment on my dime, and I supplied all the time. And I kept the records. So every night I would go home and type into my spreadsheet and fill out all this stuff, right? And we had kids who did very, very well. What it also helped us do, though, was identify kids with developmental deficits. And when I say developmental deficits, that sounds really strong. It sounds like, you know, they can't walk. And that's not true. What it is kids with motor planning issues who can't do more than 2 or 3 degrees of freedom. Right. So, you know, I would have I would test a kid and a kid, I'll say, you know, 12, 13 years old, put your hands on the wall and do a wall push up. And they would bend at the waist. So instead of bending their shoulders and elbows, they would bend forward. Mm-hmm. And their hands would stay there and they would bend forward like they're kissing the wall. Mm-hmm. Motor planning. That's motor planning in a young adolescent. right? So then we would work on motor planning. We would do things that didn't require 4, 5, 6 degrees of freedom. Okay. Some of those kids came along very, very well. Some just didn't have the attention span, if you will, to stick with it. Or mom and dad didn't have the attention span to deal with it.
Did you have a protocol that you used for everyone? Biomechanics?
I presented this at the ACBSP conference. I think it was in 2011 in Boston. I
probably wasn't listening to you back then.
Probably not. So I presented this
back then.
I presented this there. And so really what happened was I created a neutral program based on whether they had so I looked at flexion postures, right? Where, you know, the kid walks around with his belly kind of protruded.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So that's more of like a flexor weakness mm-hmm. position. And then the other side of the coin was the extensor side, right? Mm-hmm. Where they're kind of like, you know, I'm looking at, you know, kids who are loosey goosey and kids who have this, you know, walking around with their butt sticking out and their belly forward. Mm-hmm. Right. So I tried to create a program that was down the middle and I could take care of both sets of kids. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's what we did. So everything was based on some type of neutral activity, whether it's push, pull, closed chain, open chain, rotator cuff, you know, pulling, whatever it was. I tried to get gravity involved, right? There had to be certain exercises that were 90 degrees to gravity. There had to be exercises that were weight bearing, right? Because of the CNS stimulation thing, mm-hmm. right? So if I gave them a certain exercise, I'd say, this isn't to make your muscle stronger. It's to make your brain stronger. Nice. It's to make that connection from your brain to the joint stronger. So that's what I did. Okay.
And
you can, if you search it, if you look like it's probably like Auburn Stingrays strength and conditioning or something like that. I have two videos up on YouTube someplace out there. Mm-hmm. And then the presentation notes are from ACBSP in Boston. And I think it was 2011.
Was this for swimmers only or no? Was this?
So I've adapted it. I've adapted yeah. it. For, uh-huh. Actually, I've adapted it for a field goal kicker.
Ooh, okay. Oh, nice. Okay. So you can apply this to other.
Yes. Yes. And sports. It's really the basics, right? It's gravity. It's closed chain. It's CNS, single limb stance and rotator cuff strengthening. Really, that's the gist. And then you design everything else around that.
I think that is like absolutely imperative because these kids are growing and they're growing into their body and their nervous system isn't integrating as fast as like a Great Dane
yeah.
puppy,
yeah.
you know, feeling. So that for anybody listening, I think that is absolutely imperative to get the central nervous system.
And one of the things that's degrading the central nervous system, not for nothing, is screen time. They're spending so much time on screens, whether it be, you know, the time frame that they had to, you know, take classes on Zoom from home and being not around their peers and things like that. We know that the scientific studies and accumulation of data that clearly show that the intelligence, I don't know if it's intelligence level, but they're grades or learning ability have regressed coming out of COVID, right? And that's not controversial. Everybody knows this. This is a fact. So, but that is a negative to their athletic ability as well because of that central nervous system, right? They need that central nervous system. Somebody sent me a meme this morning. It said something like, you know, and not to get on kids today, you know, sound like my father, right? It's I've become my father, right? I admit it. So, you know, kids these days are soft or something like that. When I was 5, I died and my mother told me to walk it off.
Yeah. It's father. I love that. That was good.
Yeah. You know. True. You know, Hey Dale, on that topic, you know, the last couple of years, kids were sitting home, they're on screens, they weren't moving, they weren't doing stuff, and then all of a sudden when things started to open up, everything went like from zero to 1,000, and they started having practices every day, games every day. They tried to catch up. The coaches that weren't making any money during the 2 years because they weren't coaching a team were like trying to double up, and the trainers weren't making money. They tried to double up and it got going crazy. The other thing, so I'd like you to talk about, are you seeing a lot more overuse injuries now? That's topic number one. And the other topic I want you to talk about for especially the adolescents is pitch count. Because you're starting to see these kids. I had a kid coming in the other day, his shoulder was killing him. And I go, well, why is it so sore? And he goes, well, I pitched last night. And his mom goes, yeah, he threw 97 pitches. And I went, 97? You haven't, in April. Yeah, and you haven't thrown for a while because you were on the DL list, and now you're coming back in your first game, you're throwing 97 pitches. So that's what the coach wanted. I go, but what did you want as a parent? You know, so can you give us some talks on, you know, pitch counts and that some of these parents have to step up and not be bullied by the coaches and the kids. But can you talk us a little about overuse injuries and pitch
counts? Yeah, the answer to your first question is yes. We are definitely seeing more overuse. Seeing it a lot in softball. Okay, really? girls softball. I think you hit on it, Terry, that they came out gangbusters, and then these kids just wanted to go crazy. The coaches went crazy. Parents were enthusiastic to get their kids out of the house. Okay, so we're seeing a lot. And traditionally, on the girls' softball side of things, they don't have formal injury prevention programs. This is still an issue. I've been talking about this for 20 years. I've been talking about girls' softball injuries for 20 years, about the neglect on the side of coaches not to implement. This is 2023, right? I think I went to my first ASMI injuries in baseball course in like 1998. Okay. And even back then, you know, listening to James Andrews and, you know, Frank Jobe and, you know, Kevin Wilk and those guys, and they would talk about the research in softball, but it just doesn't get to small town. Right. So you may be in a bigger area where there's more population, more money, things like that. The school, we have a local school. I think their graduating class is probably like 60 kids. All right. So you're talking about a small town program who's very good. However, they just don't have the resources to implement these things. And then not to mention in a school that small, almost everybody's a three sport athlete, right? It's very, and when you start getting into small town and you don't have a lot of bodies, those bodies play every, you know, every season.
Okay. But is that good, Dale, or is that
it,
bad?
It is good. It is good. However, okay, then you start to lose the communication aspect of, hey, we need injury prevention for this particular sport or injury prevention for this sport. And that injury prevention may be different, right? Mm-hmm. So that being said, when we look at these overuse and you look at pitch counts, we threw every day all the time. But we didn't throw every day all the time organized, right? So we didn't go to the field and get on a mound and throw, you know, X pitches, and we didn't throw, you know, curveballs at 13, and we didn't even know what a circle changeup was. We didn't know what a split finger fastball was. We didn't know what a forkball was. We didn't know what a cutter was, right? I mean, you know, we threw a slurve and a fastball. I mean, that was, you know, that's it, right? That's what we knew. And maybe a four seam and a two seam fastball, right? But we did things, you guys, you know, obviously you guys are old enough, but do you remember a game we used to play, three flies up? used to hit a rubber ball off a wall. And you'd have a group of people.
Yes. Right.
And you had you had to catch three. If you caught three, then you were the guy up throwing the ball against the wall. Right.
Yeah.
And how many hours did we do that?
Yep.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Right.
So you had three flies up.
Right.
Then, you know, I was essentially an only child, right? My brother's 7 years older than me. So, you know, there's a social disconnect there. Okay. My parents' basement was unfinished. We had a brick wall and I used to sit in the doorway. I used to kneel in the doorway of the laundry room. And I used to throw a rubber ball and bounce it off the wall. And I did that for hours.
Yeah.
Like hours, right? Like if I, you know, was home, I didn't, you know, my buddies were around and I couldn't get there. And I would just go down there and throw. And I try to hit the same spot every time. That's how I developed arm slot. Okay. It was in my parents' basement in the laundry room. Okay. So, you know, I'm like throwing a ball. And then my grade school had the back wall, some people would call it graffiti, but it was a square painted on the wall with a dot in the middle of the strike zone.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many seventh game World Series wins I have against that wall. But, you know, I probably threw 200 pitches against that wall a day.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Right. So we threw a lot more, but we also did a lot of other things. We played street hockey. We played basketball.
Yeah.
We played sandlot ball. We went down and hopped the freight train. We, you know, we climbed trees. You know, we did all kinds of other things where, oh, by the way, we could get hurt. And we didn't wear helmets. Right. Like, you know, like the meme goes, you know, I would lay there unconscious until my mother sent somebody to get me for dinner. So you have that aspect of everything's become so selective because of fear. Right. Parents are afraid they will get hurt.
Right.
So it's then you have sports selection. Right. Oh, I'm only playing baseball now.
Yeah.
At like 12.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's part of it. Now let's get to the crux of it. And the crux of it is when you have, but so this player you're talking about, Terry, is a good player, right? Okay. Yeah. So let's, for argument's sake, let's say that your player is 2 to 3 standard deviations above the norm for his age. Okay. His pitch count should actually be that of somebody who's 2 years younger. Right? We don't take the horse and ride it until it lays down. No, we protect the thoroughbred. Mm-hmm. This is what's not happening. The thoroughbred's not being protected. We see the good player and the coach drools. Like they got the drool coming out. Okay. And it's like, I'm going to ride this horse all the way to a championship, whether it's softball, swimming, baseball.
Yeah.
Right. They see, ooh, I got Studley Do-Right.
Right.
And Studley Do-Right's going to get me that championship. So instead of saying, wow, this kid's really got him, her, whatever, has potential to be really good. When I say good, go to the next level. Well, the next level is college, like get a college scholarship, get an education. Mm-hmm. Then it's, oh, maybe professional or maybe national level or Olympic level or things like that. So what from a, and I hate to get into moral imperatives, but from a moral standpoint, right? And I'm the last person that should be talking about morality.
Yeah.
But from a moral imperative, when a coach sees a player like that, they have to restrain their intuition, which is, wow, we can win a lot of games. And change that to, wow, this kid has a future and I should protect that future.
Right, right.
Right?
Yeah.
Which means, no, they shouldn't throw 97 pitches. They should probably throw 75 or 80 as a ceiling. Right? So I'm gonna whether we're winning, we're losing, he's throwing strikes, he's throwing hard, he's got the game in command. I mean, watch a Major League Baseball game early in the season. Even with all the injuries, you are still seeing managers walk out there in the middle of an inning and say, yep, give me the ball, man. You hit your 80. Have a nice day. Right. Great job. We appreciate your effort. Right. We're going to give you some help. We're going to call the guy in, you know, give me the right hander. Okay. And we're going to call him in from the bullpen. Right. Yeah. I mean, we're going to bring in Wild Thing. It's time. Yeah. Right?
Right.
And this is what the high school youth level coaches are not doing. They're not recognizing that, hey, this kid is a couple standard. And Michael Axe at the University of Delaware put out a chart. He published a chart, and I use it in my presentations, where you don't need a jugs gun. So you can check standard deviations by, he gives one column with norms of distance and speed for each age. So you don't need a jugs gun. You don't have to spend how, I don't even know what a jugs gun costs today, radar gun costs today, right? But all you need is a tape measure. And you put the tape measure out and you have the kid throw from center field to home plate and you measure how far they can throw. And then you look at the chart and let's say they can throw, they're 13 and they can throw X distance, let's say 250 feet. And then you look at the chart and it tells you how many standard deviations above the norm they are. And then you look at that and you say, oh, they should not be throwing 90 pitches. They should be throwing 65 pitches because they're that far above everybody. We need to protect that.
Interesting.
I've had 12-year-olds because they're studly, right? You look at them. Mm-hmm. I've caught them, like warmed them up. And like, I'm afraid back there. And I used to catch, right? And you know, I got this 12-year-old throwing gas from 46 feet. Well, same 12-year-old ended up with a slap tear.
Oh, jeez. Really?
Why? Because overuse.
Yeah.
Instead of saying no, right? If, you know, parents would say, wow, the kid's really, really good. No, he's not really good. He throws really hard. Okay? Mm-hmm. If he was that good, he'd never reach his pitch count in 6 innings. Mm-hmm. Okay? Yeah. He's striking kids out because they're swinging in fear. Mm-hmm. Right? They're hoping that the ball hits the bat. They're not trying to make the bat hit the ball.
Yeah.
Okay. So he's throwing a lot of balls because he's wild, but he's getting a lot of strikeouts because kids are just swinging in self-defense. That doesn't mean you're good. That means you just throw really, really hard. Mm-hmm. Good means your pitch count's low. You're getting kids out by throwing strikes. Different story. Right. That answer your question, Terry?
Okay, yeah, that's
well,
perfect. Thank you.
Dale, I'm going to go into a different modes. We're going to talk high gear now. Imagine you're driving your yellow Mustang.
Camaro.
All right. Camaro, excuse me. Oh, I said a bad word.
You did say Mustang. A bad word.
Yeah. Camaro, your yellow, souped up, because, insane Camaro.
Because Bumblebee was not a Mustang.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Bumblebee was a Camaro with a King's license plate.
All right. So strap yourself in because we got rapid fire questions that okay. We're going to throw out to you with the brief answer that works best. So are you ready, Dale?
I'm ready.
Question number one. What sport do you see has the highest risk of shoulder injuries?
What age group?
Which one?
What age group?
Oh, what age? Oh, good. Let's say teenagers.
Swimming.
Nice. And adults or pro level?
Baseball.
Beautiful. Love it. Question number two. Most common condition that refers to the shoulder, such as referred pain that may not be a mechanical injury in the shoulder, but something that refers that oftentimes a doctor might confuse.
It's going to be one of two things based on age. And in the younger individual, actually, gallbladder.
Nice.
Okay. In an older individual, cervical radiculopathy from degenerative neuroforaminal encroachment.
I love it. I love it. Great answer. Question number three. Best one exercise to keep your upper extremities healthy for the traveler?
For the traveler?
Yeah. Someone who doesn't have access to a gym.
Would be the prone dynamic Blackburn.
What is that, Dale?
You'd have to buy a copy of the Buckburger 12, available on iTunes.
There it is.
Terry, we're going to have to include that link on our podcast.
I'll include the link, but you have to show us.
So basically you're going to picture me, I'm laying face down. So you guys are the floor.
All right.
Okay. So I'm laying face down. I got a little towel roll under my forearm because I got this Buckberger profile nose here. That's genetic. Everybody in the family has it. Unfortunately, I gave it to my son. Every Buckberger has it. All right. So anyway, you're laying face down. Little towel roll does two things: clears any genetic appendage, and it allows you to get a neutral cervical spine. Okay. Arms are at your side with your palms up. Okay. So you're laying down, arms at your side, Spencer. You're not here.
Down. This. Okay. I got it.
At your side, face down.
Okay.
All right. You're going to squeeze your shoulder blades together. You're going to lift your palms to the level of your butt. Okay. Mm-hmm. Assuming you have a normal anatomical buttocks. Okay. And it's not overtly large. Okay. Otherwise, if it's overtly large, use the greater trochanter as a landmark. Okay. So squeeze the shoulder blades, lift the palms to, let's say, greater trochanter level. Now you're going to hold that position and you're going to rotate your shoulders externally to try to make your thumbs point to the ceiling. Some people can do it, some can't. Okay. Now you're going to start to abduct your arms, but you're going to continue to externally rotate them. And you're clearing the floor, right? You're staying off the floor to about 120 degrees, humeral 120 degrees, not hand 120 degrees, humeral 120 degrees. And the thumbs are up to the ceiling now.
Nice.
Okay. And that's then hard. Bring it back. That's one. Repeat.
That's
wash, rinse, repeat.
Love it.
Okay. You can do it with water bottles. You can do it. And quite frankly, most people, if they do, you know, get up to where they can do 25, 30 reps. They don't need weight, but resistance is taking you to another level, so to speak. The guys who really embraced it, I've had players who could do 30 reps of that with 5 pounds.
Okay. That is fantastic. Question number 4, which is something I really want to hear about. What do you tell a patient that sleeps face down with their arm overhead? And they got a shoulder, an impingement syndrome.
Do they sleep? Tell
them? What's that?
If they can sleep, I say sleep face down with your arm overhead.
No, but they wake up in the morning and it's
patients say it all the time. What's the? I'm gonna answer your question with a question.
Okay.
What's the best position to sleep? The one where you actually sleep.
The one you get.
Yes, that go. I get. But if okay. I probably should clarify that a patient that has a
shoulder hurts, right? So yeah. They're in pain. They're actively treating because that shoulder hurts. Okay.
Right.
Either on their back with a pillow up, a big pillow stuffed in there, right? Because you want essentially 30 degrees of abduction and 20 degrees of forward flexion, right? Is the position of greatest volume of the glenohumeral joint. And if it's laying down, it's the most relaxation. So either lying supine, you know, on their back. Okay. Or on the opposite side, with the pillow, you know, hugging the pillow.
Okay. Got it.
Those are your options. I mean, other than that, sleep in a recliner.
Dale, question number 5.
Okay.
You're going to enjoy this one. Name one thing about yourself that most people don't know about, other than you have the coolest son in the world because he just got certified as an Osprey co-pilot for the USMC.
Yes, he did. Thank you. I appreciate that. One thing that they don't know about me, well, some people know, but some people don't, that I grew up, you know, I remember I watched Ann's podcast and she was saying how chiropractors have, I wrote it down, have martial arts backgrounds.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah. I don't have a martial arts background. Okay. I grew up in my father's garage. Okay. I was turning wrenches when I was 4. My first paid job was cleaning the sink in the garage for a quarter. I was liquid. That was hard, tangible money.
That
sense. Had my first salaried position at 13. At Ampco Transmissions, installing transmissions in the summertime. I don't know, there's probably child labor laws now, right, that you know, they couldn't do that today. But I would go in the morning. My father would bring me in. The boss hired me. I made $35 a week to install transmissions, clean the offices, clean the bathrooms, do inventory, sweep the shop. And then if I had a baseball game, he made my father take me home at lunchtime so I could rest before the game. Oof. But I still got my $35 a week because I was non-exempt. Right. Okay. That's, then my father, we bought the family gas station, and I worked there summers doing anything, brake jobs, whatever. But I was always turning a wrench, and I built my first car. Was a 68 Camaro. You know, came in with no interior, was on a flatbed. And I asked the guy how much he wanted for it. And he said, $250. And I said, unload it. And, I sold my moped to buy that. and I took about a year and a half and rebuilt it. I wish I still had it, but, that's why I've got the Bumblebee now instead. The 2010 Transformers Edition Camaro. So, but yeah, I'm a motorhead at heart. I still have my father's, after my dad passed away, I still have his Snap-on toolboxes from 1955 and all the Snap-on tools. And, most people don't realize I'm a motorhead.
But when that, I love the story. And yet, you know, Ann talked about, you know, being, you know, having that martial arts background, which is the art part of chiropractic. Yep. But Dale, you know, cranking wrenches like that builds those forearms up. So I can't imagine what it's like getting some ART or getting adjusted by you. And that's what makes you so good.
And just one more thing, because Ann wouldn't forgive me if I didn't mention this, is that I am a Bonanno by blood.
Like an Italian?
As in the five families.
Oh yeah.
Okay. So my grandmother, my mother's mother, my direct blood grandmother is a Bonanno, or was a Bonanno.
Oh man.
Okay. So I went out to the Mob Museum in Las Vegas.
I saw your family.
Okay. And first exhibit is about the Bonannos.
For real.
And the Black Hand.
That's awesome. Oh. Don't piss Dale off. Wow. Don't ever piss Dale off.
No, but that's podcast number two right
that's
there.
That's a whole other interview. Dale, we got to wrap it up, my man. That was fantastic. Juicy stuff. Terry, any comments?
No, I really appreciated all the stuff about, especially about the patients and about stuff like that. So, and pitch counts, and it's always nice to walk away with something that people can do. And, you know, everybody watch a video and watch that exercise. You should all be able to do that. It's almost like a shoulder carb. Yeah, it's even better.
Hey, I appreciate you guys having me on. This was a blast. It is great to hang out as we get later in our careers. Yeah. You know, I just passed my April 23rd was my 35th anniversary from Cairo School. You know, I know you guys have been doing it a bit longer, it's great to be able to connect with friends and colleagues that think alike and are on the same page with healthcare and stuff. So I appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, you're welcome. Well, thank Terry. This is his brainchild, man. He loves the idea of doing this,
it's
connecting
awesome.
Us all
it's
together.
It's awesome.
Thanks, Dale.
All right.
All right, man. Well, sayonara. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Crackin' Backs Podcast. We hope you enjoyed, and make sure you follow our Instagram at Crackin' Backs Podcast. Catch new episodes every Monday. See you next time.